And with that, it is time for the open microphone. First up, we have James O'Leary.
I have two short poems. These are the most credible to death. In a locked ward, flush surfaces, small and still in the visitation room, you told me you tried it again, made a noose with your bedsheet. You nearly succeeded. Small and still in the visitation room, I looked at the soft rubber coat hangers. With your bedsheet, you nearly succeeded, a permanent solution to a recurring problem. I look at the soft rubber coat hangers. I ask how, not why, you did it. A permanent solution to a recurring problem. I don't ask you the right question when I ask how, not why, you did it. In a locked ward with flush surfaces, I don't ask you the right question when you tell me you tried it again, made a noose. On the graveyard shift, my job is to make coffins. Long boxes we put into smaller boxes, into for shipping to London, New York, Shanghai. Through clattering machinery and disposable earplugs, we shout small talk at each other. When the assembly line slows, I eat the excess Tic Tacs from the discard pile, mislabeled or broken containers. My favourites are the ones not for sale in Ireland. Peach and passion, and intensity. My appetite is ruined before the 3 a.m. lunch break. I'm rattling, full of colours. 100 more coffins to make before daybreak. Thank you.
Thank you, James. And next up we have Shane Vaughan.
Thank you, Ben. I might also read two very quickly, if that's okay. I've been commission is a loose word, there's no money involved, to write a series of poems about the space between things. So here's two short enough ones that are on that sort of a theme. I'm still kind of working on them, so it's good to kind of read into the microphone. Even when we touch hand to hand, my finger to your thumb, there is a space. The oil of us slips into the round groove of identity, prints a change of tack as ridge and valley crack. Even when we say I'll hold on to the last gasp, there's a definite, soluble emptiness. And the second one. And when the plane lands, will you feel close to me then? Or is this another one of those times when space is not equal to distance squared, but inversely proportional to all the words we've locked away? We can't bear to look at the quivering luminosity of our private chats, when we know as soon as I step into your room, the truth will out itself as a proud man standing on the street corner, yelling at no one in particular. Thank you.
Thank you, Shane. And next up is Charles Clark.
On the way back from a wedding in County Clare, where it rained for about 2 or 3 days, we felt inclined and needed a break, and the break took place at a great house, Drumoland Castle in County Clare, which used to belong to the O'Briens, that's Lord Inchiquin, chief of the name. Prince of Thomas, according to our former heralds, at a great house from a superb octagonal room, the bar. One views golfers avoiding casual water. A smooth fairway and large trees becomes aware of the ineffable boredom of residence, turning the pages of the Sunday Times, a reprise of the opening scene of West of Suez, John Osborne's Lament for Emperor. world is a period piece, with waiters presenting sandwiches and brandy. And one wants to come back at least once more, to where lords and ladies on the wall were at home, and presents continuing to offer wisdom to a gaping world have paused in their earnest solicitude. Perhaps I will come back, and I say so to the waiter, as I offer a generous tip. Welcome, what I expect.
Thanks, Charles. And next up is Grania O'Connor.
Is there a desperation to me? Is there the thing I'm missing? Have I given it a shape of you? Is it forced or does this fit? Is everyone watching, knowing, waiting, going to tell me what I know, that this was doomed before it began? Or is everything a lie, and are we too pathetic to escape a mold? Because we need to be taken in, need to fit a slot, interlock and never break because we're broken. And yet I know enough to know that love's not blind, that we can give and take and nourish, given most of us are too young to be kind, but here we flourish. You make me all kinds of words for nice, and I've been sleeping well. I do not want to disappear, and I don't care if we're both weird. People are being weird everywhere right now.
Thank you, Veronica. Next is Ray Hanahan.
This is a short one. It's called Good Housekeeping. Knives, forks, plates, mugs. I must bend my back and wash them, get them ready for reuse. This ritual of hygiene must be repeated again and yet again. As a measure of a man's efforts, it is perfectly valid, but to count up by such a metric renders a life absurd. We must give to ourselves better rulers.
Thank you, Ray. Next up is Philip Spillane.
Thank you. This one's based on like a five-word challenge one. I think I took most of the words out, so there's a good, except for the good ones. And I hope you like it. It's not finished yet, but I like the idea. Developed. The film snaps with a camera flash, shuts moments and locks it in tape. Tech and reload. The objects represent a solid time, when they behaved like shells. Two immobile, sedentary models. I'm saying that because I believe they can move, and I'm choosing not to, because they have secrets to stay buried under two lips. Their fruit faces look bleak in black and white. The coloured peacock dress and the tailored black suit are poured with honey sapien, as I desire colour again, because with colour I can read minds, and with minds I can only see faces. Thank you.
Thanks, Philip. Next up is Patricia Walsh.
And this is for any one of you who have ever been a teenage girl. It's called social overload. Good for you, pouring that angle, giving the disco a miss once again, hitting the spot in front of the TV. Needing our old little friends, age gap is not prerequisite this time, holding the audience and hitting time. Illicit makeup seals the deal, red lips, white face, and dead giveaway. Going to school like this girl here. Longing for the use of the tampons unabated, menstrual blood cherished but not yet, messy and inconvenient, not a problem right now. Would you wear shoes if you had no feet? Greeting the wearing of a bra in the first instance. Showing off in the gym, park of course. Stealing cigarettes from the ground. Enough to anger and die is made to the rebel status. Local joke translated into local thief. Not to worry, surrender. Caught between two armies, choking each other aside, claiming some victory. A war never winning, at least of all me. Thank you.
That was great, Patricia. Next we have Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Ben. This is a poem in two halves. It's called Absence and Presence. I read Absence first, and it's set in Japan. Two young men, one very much under pressure, and the other who seems to have found his niche. At the house, he shoves past his mother, too stunned by his look to utter a word, hurries upstairs, locks himself in, turns his back on the world. Relief as the knocking subsides, her footsteps so light on the floor. Shame when he finds the noodles and fish she has left on a plate at his door. For months in his self-imposed jail, stale air, fetid breath, with no sky, he is mocked by a yellowing blotch on the ceiling that keeps catching his eye. Pole-axed by day, blinking at night, at wavering clusters splutter the screen. He is held by image, motion and light. Joystick his only control. Earnest, methodical, forced to compete, he watches his father's dreams fall apart. Loss of face is his choice, this stylite who keeps himself hidden from daylight and noise. Brakes screech in the Tokyo night, scraping the inside of his skull. Empty of answers he needed to find in the crowded exam hall. And then comes presence. Distant thunder in the valley. A young monk hurries, summoned by a bell. Wooden footbridge bears his weight. Light blinks among the trees. Wind disturbs a sudden drench of raindrops. Wood smoke rising in evening dampness. Prayers and practice, rice and pulses, a woven mat on swept bare boards. Life, simple in its stripped precision, holds him from harm. His heart is light.
Thank you, Mary. Next we have Thomas Howarth.
I don't have a job, so I sit at the window of our third floor apartment and I look outside for the nearest observable signs of employment. It is a building site. At this building site, the girders are white, and at the top, something jumps out, a visual shout, or rather an absence of noise. It's a man without a high-vis jacket. The white girders are the skeleton of a shopping centre in no rush to materialise, and towards the jacketless man are pointed all eyes, and I rest my chin on my hand and I wonder why he wishes to die, or perhaps he thinks he can fly, who am I to presume? Either way, of course, he jumps and falls past my level and reaches the ground and by gravity dishevels. The man lies in blood, as a paramedic is found, and contrary to dress, he's high-vis now. And with the white ribs and the reddening ground and the circulating cement around and around, I decide it's not a building site, it's open-heart surgery.
Thank you, Thomas. Maria McMahon.
Is about tinnitus, so some of you might be able to connect with that.
the sound that allows me to escape all other sounds. A ring in my ear, an auditory suicide, a daily reminder, a bullying annoyance, and then like a pebble, a constant. And the second is after watching a documentary about a girl, I suppose my own age, I would say, and it's called My Beautiful Mind. This thing I take for granted, this phantasmagoria of colours and shapes, this escape, landscape, mindscape, this place that I don't quite understand, that I underestimate, that I can't stand, that I underappreciate, that I wonder at and berate.
Thank you. And the last person on the list is Nicola Moffat.
I have two very, very dear friends who I went to school with, and we've been friends nearly 20 years now, and they lost their mum last month. And the poem is for her. It's called Judith. I wanted to know again the story. I wanted to know again the story of Judith from Holofernes, so that I might come to know your namesake, the fierce woman who strode barefoot into that desert tent. I think, too, of the Caravaggio, where slight disgust mingles oddly with a concentrated frown, as if peeling skull from spine were the same grisly business of spatchcocking a chicken, a necessary evil before you can get to the meat of the matter. Drama and the passion of composition and the contrast of red and black, so very different from your passing. And yet, the same warrior spirit could be found in your firmly planted feet. You too would do what it took to see the matter through to a head. You understood the reasons for rebirth, the necessity of shedding the skin, to slip raw and sensitive into the world. Not quite near. Each footfall pulls her closer to death, but Judith chooses to mark the passage umbilically. Into that heavy heat she slips, selling her wares with impunity. As if he weren't known to plunder, as if he towed the line that curves from breast to pelvis. When the act is done, the rest is easy. She curls her fingers to his hair, lifts his face, shows the dripping maw left by the wake of her sword. Elf shining she was christened by the faithful, and through that hot, damp morning, through the tubes and the wires, through the clicking and weeping machines, you sat an empress adorned by the fading light of your crown.